Welcome in, everybody, to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Today's kind of a somber show, folks. Last week, we lost a brilliant investigator in the paranormal field. And I'm sad to say that we did. There are times, I think, on this show that we maybe don't spend as much time as we should with certain people on this program, and this gentleman was a person we really didn't, and that's Butch Witkowski. He was the director of the UFO Research Center of Pennsylvania, a brilliant man, and his stories were amazing. He had an amazing sense of humor as well, and a quick wit about him, and he was so thorough as an investigator, and the stories he told on our show were amazing stories, and I thought just so incredibly thorough, so incredibly great, and I had such respect for the man that I didn't want his passing to go by just putting on another repeat of another show, and I wanted to be able to get some of his friends together and tell you what kind of a man Butch Witkowski was. I wanted to go in depth and tell you about the man that Butch was. So I gathered a few of his friends in the field, and I wanted to bring them onto the show and kind of give you an idea of who Butch Witkowski was, not only the investigator, but the man himself. So I gathered a couple of his friends here, and we're going to talk in this hour of Darkness Radio. Starting first, cryptozoologist Eric Altman out of Pennsylvania. He started, I guess you could say, in 1997 after attending a Bigfoot conference in Ohio. He's put together quite a few Bigfoot conferences and has been after the fella himself all over, I guess you could say, Eric, all over the woods of Pennsylvania and all over the country as we know it. Eric has also been on this program in the Monster Watch segments, and we love having Eric on the program whenever we can. Also, it's my pleasure to present Lon Strickler. Lon Strickler is a Freudian researcher, author, and publisher of the syndicated Phantoms and Monsters blog. He began the blog in 2005, which has steadily grown in popularity and is read daily by tens of thousands of paranormal enthusiasts, investigators, and those seeking the truth. His research and reports have been featured in hundreds of online media sources. Several of these published reports have been presented on various television segments, including the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, Sci-Fi's Paranormal Witness, Fact or Faked, Paranormal Files, and Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America. Lon's been on hundreds of radio and online broadcasts, including this one here. He's also been on Coast to Coast AM. He's been featured on Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America and television show for the Sykesville Monsters episode. Lon's written 8 books and is currently the host of Arcane Radio on Beyond Explanation YouTube channel. Also, we'll have Dave Scott appearing from Spaced Out Radio. He'll be coming in a little bit later on the program. He's been in terrestrial radio for 10 years, and he's also been with Spaced Out Radio, I believe, for 4 years now. And an incredible program that you guys have to check out, Spaced Out Radio. And I've never talked, believe it or not, with Dave before. I'm looking forward to welcoming Dave in a little bit later and getting a chance to chat with him. So, gentlemen, I want to welcome you in. It's not your first time by any means to Darkness Radio. Thanks for showing up.
Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you, Tim. Unfortunately, not good under the circumstances, but always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, I thank you both for coming in. I know, like you said, a very somber, very sad occasion to have to come in and have a discussion. Like I said, I had immense respect for Butch, and I have immense respect for someone who can take up and take up their time to explore a subject that a lot of people might. And I want you to speak on this for a second. I go to Lon first, that they might, I don't want to use the word ridicule, but I'm going to use it. Ridicule, or they might kind of, you know, hem and haw about. It's easy for us to say, oh, I believe in ghosts, or I believe in something that you can't see, or something that, you know. but they have a hard time looking at something like UFOs, or, you know, it's easy for them to kind of ha-ha at UFOs, or even something like a wolfman or a cryptid. But to make it legitimate, and I find when I listen to Butch, when I've listened to his stories, Butch has a way of putting a lot of credibility just in his words, through his inflection, through being very detailed and being a very detailed investigator. There's a credibility to his voice. And I guess I would ask you, Lon, what is it about the way Butch presents his cases that gives him that credibility?
Well, he had a UFO encounter in 1989 when he was living in Tucson. That kind of what sparked it for him. And you know, when he moved back to Pennsylvania, because he was originally from there, he joined MUFON and became, I think, a section director there with Pennsylvania. And eventually he had started UFORCOP, UFO Research Center, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And he was actually looking into a lot of phenomena other than just the UFOs. I mean, abductions, mutilations, encounters, all kind of, you know, a lot of the stuff that, you know, MUFON kind of stays away from for the most part. But he was interested in that. And, you know, when I met Butch, what happened was, and Eric was there. We were at Phenomenology in 2013 up in Gettysburg, and I was talking to Sean Forker, and I was talking to Eric, and I was saying, you know, I've been looking into this Todd C's death case for many years, haven't gotten far with it. You know, there's no information out there, and for whatever reason, Butch heard about it, and he had been looking into it for a while. And he called me and said, hey, you know, why don't we join together and dig into this thing? And that's how my collaboration with Butch actually started. And we spent a 2 solid years on this Todd C's case, and we did collect some pretty interesting evidence, got the actual forensic report from it, mm-hmm. and a few other things, got some people talking. So we started coming up with some, what we thought were answers to it. But anyway, as Butch and I continued to work together, he got interested in what I was doing, which was cryptids. And the whole upright canine dogman thing interested him. And it was so unusual. He thought that, yeah, I'm going to look into this. So starting around 2015, he went head first into it. He blamed me from the very beginning for getting involved in that. But that's what he started doing. And, he was all hands on with everything. So that's just the way he was. And he didn't mind talking about it. And, you know, one thing about Butch was anytime I needed to talk to him, all I had to do was dial him up. He was there. So, he was an excellent investigator. He kind of told it the way it was. He didn't shy on much. And, if something happened, he wasn't going to whitewash it. He'd tell the truth and tell you what he actually experienced and what was going on with the investigation.
What was it about the upright canine cryptid that fascinated him? What was it that kind of got his attention?
I don't know. I mean, he had asked me about it, and I told him some of the cases I had in Pennsylvania, some of the old cases that had been going on and had happened in Pennsylvania back in the 1800s. And we put a call out for witnesses. And about that time, not long after that, we got our first couple of cases up in Clearfield County, Pennsylvania, where the first two came from. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty interesting cases. And ever since that time, I think we probably collected 30 cases since 2015 that turned out to be what we felt were viable cases. So, he was strong into it, very strong into that phenomena. And he worked on that up till the day he died.
You know, I went back and I listened to the last show that we had him on where he was talking about that canine cryptid. Mm-hmm. And he was fascinated with the fact that a creature that once made an appearance and had an article about it in 1865 was still around to this day, or supposedly still around to this day, at least an iteration of it was. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had extreme respect about with him was he was asked the question, you know, if this thing is as big as you is said it is and is as dangerous as it said it is, what precautions do you take? And his voice softened. And he said, well, you know, and if he was scared, that I think that was thrown in there as well. And he said, well, no, and, you know, he wasn't really scared per se, but, you know, he would go back in those woods and he'd, you know, go look for it. And he said, you know, we have a variety of non-lethal weapons, and he named them. And then he said, well, of course, you know, we've got lethal weapons, but we don't want to use them. And that's where the respect for me came in. He said, you know, these non-lethal weapons can stop this, 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 and this. And he named a bunch of large animals. Mm-hmm. But I don't ever expect that I'll have to use it.
Yeah, I mean, he was like me. He was a no-kill guy. And, you know, it didn't matter if it was Bigfoot, upright canines, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. You know, he took the evidence as it came. If there was a body, if something was already dead, then fine. But no, I don't think Butch would hurt a soul. I really don't. And he'd take it for what it is. If he had to protect himself, then he'd probably use something. I mean, fortunately, none of the cases that we had been involved with ever came to that point. But yeah, I mean, these things are pretty scary. And some of the descriptions that we've had from people over the years have been pretty harrowing. And, you know, I don't think I'd want to encounter one of these things, to be honest with you. And I think Butch is the same way. He, you know, he had a respect for it. He would have liked to have seen one, but he had a respect for it.
Right. Not only respect, but there was a calmness there. Mm-hmm. I would think that if he had seen one, if one had appeared in front of him, I think that even though it might have appeared incredibly scary or incredibly frightening, just in its stature, maybe in its sound, in its presentation, in its fury, I don't think Butch would have been the guy to turn and run, or, you know, turn tail and grab a weapon and fire it right away. I think he would have been the guy to take a moment and take a breath and look at it. Mm-hmm. Not in a menacing way, but in a calm way. Almost to be the calming presence, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, the calming presence, and to be the calm in the eye of the storm. And I could, the way I almost can project that is because of the way he came across when you would talk to him, and the way he came across when you would listen to him in an interview. If I may, gentlemen, and I know I haven't brought Eric in too much yet as well, but I'm going to hear after we listen to this bit of an interview from the last time we had him. And I want to demonstrate for our audience the calm that is Butch, because I brought a case to you guys here in Butch's own words and in Butch's voice. And I want to bring this case to our audience. Of kind of a harrowing case, and it's a paranormal case, and it's not normally Butch's forte. And this is a case of Butch being a fish out of water here and not really being in a situation that is normally his forte. And just exactly how calm he is and how analytical he is, but at the same time handling business. So here we go. This is from Butch's last appearance, and I want to say this is 2017. So here's Butch, and he's talking to Dave, and he's talking about a weird case that he initially thinks is, I believe, linked to a UFO and it goes sideways. So here we go. And I'm going to keep our audio up so we can react to this. But here's Butch talking to Dave.
Well, that'll bring up the next thing that happened during this time, during the same time, this December. I got a call, again, a UFO sighting. And I go down, and the guy tells me what he's got and shows me the picture he got. And, you know, everything that part's all good. There's no problem there. So he invites me in the house. He said, now, since that happened, these weird things are happening. I'm going like, well, what are you talking about? And I started looking around the house, and it was like walking into the house of Usher. Do you remember what that looked like? I mean, there's pictures of Satan. There's crucifixes. There's pictures, oil paintings of the Inquisition. The house is filled with it. And I said, what do you do for a living? He said, well, an antique dealer. I said, oh, you collect this stuff. He said, oh, yeah. I said, you know, this stuff is not really good to hang around with. He said, oh, no, we sell it. You know, people up in New York buy this stuff big time, big bucks. I went, oh, okay, whatever. I said, so what's the problem? He said, well, there's stuff here that we don't know what it is. And I said, what do you mean? So he starts showing me some pictures off a camera. And I said, I don't know what that is. And then I went out to the truck, got a meter. Took a tri-field meter through the house. The minute I walked up to the door, the meter pinned, and it never went back to zero the whole time I was there. And then I said, when did this start? And he said, well, right after we saw the UFO. And I said, okay. And he said, we don't go down the basement anymore because there's something down there. And I said, well, can I go down? He said, yeah, you can go down, but I'm not going with you. So I got three quarters of the way down, and I got that same feeling like, I don't think I'm going to continue this trip. I think I'll shorten this one and go back up. Well, then he said, we don't stay upstairs either. So they live on the first floor. It's a very large home. So they got this, the parlor. I mean, there's not, the only thing new in that house that is even remotely new is the kitchen area. Everything else is antique. Everything. Glasses, cups, dishes, spoons, knives, everything's antique. Sofas, chairs, tables, pictures, frames, I mean, everything. So we've been going back and forth with this now since December. The other day he sends me some pictures. He said, now, here's one for the books. And I went, okay. So he says, you remember where the child gate is? Because they have a little 1.5-year-old guy. And this kid's small. He's not a big kid. He's just a little kid. And he don't even get to the near the top of this 3-foot-high childproof gate that separates the kitchen from the den. And he said, here's the first picture. And I'm looking, there's a picture of the gate and the doorway. Okay, yeah, I see the sofa. Okay, well, he says, here's the second picture. That's a picture of a mirror. And I said, okay, so it's a mirror. What am I looking at here? He says, well, I can see them without the mirror, but I can't photograph them. I said, photograph who? He says, I'll show you in picture number 3, but let me explain this. He said, we're in the kitchen making supper. I turned around. I saw these two shadowy things standing behind the gate in the den. He said, ain't the kid. The kid's right here. We don't have any dogs and cats, so it ain't dogs and cats. I said, okay, then what? He said, I remembered in an old movie about, you know, you can't see things through a mirror, and some things you can see through a mirror that aren't there. So he said he went upstairs, got the wife's dressing mirror, one of these tall, 5-foot-tall things, brought it down, set it in the corner of the kitchen, and pointed it in the direction of the gate. Because he said, every time I picked up the camera and pointed it at them, they would disappear. He said, so I picked the camera up this time, they were in the mirror, and I photographed it, and there they are. And I'll be damned, there they are. And I don't know what they are. One's a little taller than the other. I would say the taller one is about 4 foot. And the other one maybe 3'4", 3'5". They have no shape to speak of. And they're stone black. And he said, the last picture I'm going to send you, I turned around and took a picture without the mirror, and they're not there. So there's a picture with they're not there. A picture of the mirror where you can see him, a picture directly at the mirror where he took a really good photograph of him, and the last picture where he turned around and took a shot, and they weren't there. How's that for bizarre?
Yeah. Now, what type of other activity is he having going on in the house? I mean, does he feel threatened and frightened of this location?
Yeah, they won't live upstairs anymore. So I said, well, can I go upstairs? He said, yeah. He said, I'll go along with you. He said, but you go first. Oh, man. So So we go up the steps, and I get to the top of the steps, and I go into the kids' room, and I have a meter with me, and the kids' room is fine. The meter doesn't even move other than residual. So we go into his wife's room, and I said, first thing I noticed was two closets, and both closets had these huge lag bolts in them, screws, you know. I said, what's with the bolts? He said, we don't keep those doors open. I said, what's in there? He said, I don't know, and I don't want to know. I said, well, can we open one? He went, you can, I'm not. So he gets me a screwdriver, and I take the screws out of the door, and I open the door. And it was like this god-awful smell in there. Not sulfurous, but like mildew, wet dog kind of smell. And I put the meter in there, pinned the needle right away. I took the meter out, and it was halfway, just like it was in the rest of the room. I put the screws back in. And I said, so what happened in this room that you got these things? He said, in the middle of the night, he said, you could hear the doors open. He said, look at the end of the bed, and there'd be something standing there. He said, when we screwed the doors shut during the daytime, we don't have that problem anymore, but we're not staying up here. And he said, and then there's the attic, which is another whole story. It's kind of like the basement. And
well, I said, Butch, okay. Butch, let me ask you this. For these people that block off rooms,
mm-hmm.
if there's truly something otherworldly there, why can they be there but they can't get through a wooden door or a screwed wooden door?
Yeah, that my thing exactly. I mean, if it's all over the house and it go from wall to wall or room to room right. without any, what the heck's a screw going to do? But I guess it gives them peace of mind. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a paranormal guy. I'm beginning to believe I am now. So I go up the attic. Halfway up those steps, Dave, I haven't had a fear like that since the day I got married. And it was, I had to push myself to take those last four or five steps. I'm halfway up when the guy says to me, he says, you need to look at the circle on the floor. And I turned around, I said, what are you talking about? He said, there's a circle on the floor and it moves around. And I said, okay. So I get to the top of the steps, and the first thing I catch in the corner of my eye is a coffin. I'm sure everybody has one of those in their attic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple.
Yeah, and then there's like this table with these little vials. Maybe some were 4 inches high, maybe a couple were six. Most were about three, of dirt. Oh, I didn't pay attention to that. And the lighting up there is terrible. Probably a 10-watt bulb or 15, 20-watt bulb. It was terrible. But I could see the circle. So I walked over to the circle. Of course, the needle's pinned. And I'm looking at it, and it's not painted. I scuffed it with my foot. It doesn't scuff. It doesn't move. And I started to walk back toward the stairway to go back down, and I stopped, and I thought, like, you know what? Maybe I ought to take a really good picture of this. As I turned around, the circle wasn't there anymore. It was over in the left-hand corner of the room, and the light went out. And that's when this guy ran down those steps. So I get to the bottom. I said, does this go on a lot? I mean, with the lights blowing and stuff? He says, oh, he said, I buy a case of light bulbs. He said, every 2 weeks. He said, I'm replacing light bulbs constantly here. I said, have you had the electric checked? He said, I grew up in this house. My parents live across the street. When I got married, they gave me this house. This house has brand new electric in it. He said, a new 200 amp service. Everything's been going over, new plumbing, heating, everything. I said, okay, well, that rules that out. So just to make my own mind, I went out in the truck and got a voltmeter and came back in and checked a couple sockets, and they were all neutrals and hots. Everything was fine. So I said, what's with the coffin up in the attic? He said, oh, we bought that at a sale. A funeral home went out of business down near Philly. We bought that at a sale. We bought it for like $30. I went, what are you going to do with it? And he said, I don't know. We're thinking about making it into a coffee table or something. I said, you need to get this stuff out of your house. I said, and what's with the little jars that look like dirt or sand? He said, well, that's dirt from graves. I said, so you collect dirt from graves? Well, my wife used to really be into this satanic stuff, he said, and I was into Kabbalah. And it just seemed like, you know, we just wanted to learn. And I'm thinking like, oh, my God, whatever you brought into this house is nuts. I said, have you bought anything at a sale lately? You just brought in when this started. Yeah, well, there's one thing. We keep it out in the back of the BMW. I said, back of the BMW. He said, yeah, it's in a trunk locked up in a box. I said, well, what is it? He said, it's a mask from Haiti. I said, can I see it? He said, I'll bring it in, open it up, take whatever pictures you want, take a quick look at it. I'm locking it back up and taking it outside. I said, oh, okay. So he goes outside. He's out there for about 5 minutes. He comes walking. He's white as a sheet. Like, he just got held up in Brooklyn, you know?
Right.
And he puts it on the table. He unlocks it, opens a box. I'm staring at this thing. I get my pictures. And I'm really looking at it. I'm going like, this is a voodoo death mask. And he says, yeah. He said, you know your antiques. I said, my wife used to be involved in antiques a lot. I said, those are real goat horns. And this thing is made out of real human skin. Yeah, we know that. I said, could you get this out of here, please? And off he went. So this is still on. These three that I mentioned tonight, they're still ongoing, along with, of course, the bipedal. But I'm beginning now to believe, because, like I said, these two particular cases started out as UFO reports with UFOs seen by the witness and by myself. And so that's factual. But the stuff that has followed at the farm and at this house are just so bizarre and unnerving that I don't know which way to go with it. I don't know where to go. I mean, it just turned me right around in my thinking, like, okay, what's these things in the mirror that are at the doorway that he can't photograph when he looks at them, but right. When he shoots them in the mirror, he gets the photograph. And what's with this barn, who everything around it gets destroyed in a hellacious windstorm, and they don't even blow the leaves away, or an empty trash can is parked outside, and there's no damage to the house. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, certainly.
So there you go. It's
yeah, I remember that now.
You remember that story now?
Well, yep. What happened was, and I don't know if he told Eric about it, but
he did,
this happened in, that was Adamstown, Pennsylvania, up in Lancaster County.
Okay.
And he had asked me and my son to come up there and take a look at this house and the farm. Mm-hmm. So we got up there about a weekend later, and they had moved out of the house. They were gone.
Hmm.
Yeah, that house, there's something that, you know, this guy had seen a UFO. He had taken a picture of a UFO, and I still have the pictures actually. And that's what Butcher's there to ask them about that. He walks into this house and all his stuff is there. And I saw the pictures. And yeah, it's what he said. And that farm is crazy. It's in a valley. There were UFOs going over this valley, but the two days before we had come up there, there was a real bad windstorm, tornadoes actually coming through. It was northern Lancaster County, just before you got into Lebanon County. And this funnel came through and kind of circled around the property, hit everybody else's property in the valley, tore everything up, trees and everything. But, yeah, it didn't touch his place. And when I went up there, there was a lot going on. We were seeing some strange apparitions and kind of like these Glimmer Man apparitions near the old chicken house that had just been built. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And I honestly really don't have any answers as to what was going on, though I did find out later that the area – had been an old Susquehannock burial or ritual site. So that's the only thing I can explain. Some type of sentry or sentinels were there that were haunting the place. But, you know, I haven't been up there in a couple of years. So I, you know, Butch would occasionally go back there and check up on the guy. But, you know, I did hear drumming. I did hear all kinds of weird stuff. And the guy verified that later on, cause he was hearing the same stuff, cause there's a pond there and I was hearing it from the pond. So who knows, but yeah, but that I remember that story now, and I was supposed to go in there, but they were gone.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Eric, what were you going to add to that?
I just recall hearing those cases. Butch called me on the phone and was giving me an update on some of the cases that he and Lon were checking into. And now that you play them back, I remember him talking about them. In the farm case, I remember him telling me about that, the Glimmer Man, the shiny, sparkly man that was seen around the the chicken coop and the UFOs that were seen over the house and the valley and the pond. And I, if I'm not mistaken, Lon, he was they were seeing orbs or something like that on the property as well. And he wanted to talk to me about it because I had seen, I'd experienced some strange lights in the forest myself. And he and I were comparing notes and he was asking me what size they were in color and sharing his this guy's experience with me. And yeah, but one thing about it, it's interesting about Butch was he's very matter of fact. He doesn't embellish. He doesn't you know, make things bigger than they were. He's just very matter of fact. And when he presents the case to you, he presents it as he experienced it or what the witness told him. And he's very calm. I mean, it, you mentioned he doesn't get riled up about it. He's just very matter of fact. And I'm actually surprised he didn't use a little more colorful metaphors during the interview because that was Butch. I mean, he told it like it was, and he threw a couple of colorful words in there occasionally too. But yeah, I remember those cases very, very well. And yeah,
like he told me on
the
phone,
and we talked for a couple hours at a time. Before you knew it, I'm looking at the clock. One, we talked for 2 hours already.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, well, we've been talking for a while and sharing his cases and everything like that. And yeah, he was a great guy to talk to, and so full of knowledge. He knew stuff that even I wasn't familiar with. As far as UFO studies go. And it was always great talking to Butch, and I really enjoyed his company for sure.
Like, he just got held up in Brooklyn was my favorite line out of that entire deal. That got me. I don't know why, but it just got me. And you know, to be describing that coffin and it was just so, yep. And he had a Kaufman up there, you know, and the jars of dirt from different graves, and not a holy shit moment for him. It was just a, you know,
matter of fact,
in the death mask, maybe you should get that out of here, you know, just is a calm that is unlike anything, you know, other, it's rare, you know, you hear in an era where, and I think you two can agree with this, in an era where it started with a dude run and everyone's running from everything and screaming, I find it refreshing that there's a man who stood in there and just said, hey, you know, this is pretty interesting, but yeah, I think maybe you should remove this.
Yeah, you want to get that Haitian mask away from me now?
Yeah.
Just that matter of fact tone.
Yeah, now that I've seen it, maybe you should put it back. I think
he told me, he said, you know, I want to take you over here to this place in Adamstown, and I want you to tell these people to get this crap out of here. And I said, okay, well, I'll go over there and look at it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, from every indication that he told me, I mean, they were just collecting all kinds of crazy stuff. But no, we went over there and we were banging on the door and nobody was answering, and Butch said, somebody's always here. And then the neighbor came over and said, no, they moved out here last week.
Wow. Just up and up and gone. Now I got to ask you, Lon, we all, I think, kind of know the answer, but for the audience that's listening, any one of those objects in the house could have drawn any amount of paranormal activity to the house. But with everything that's assembled there, do you think any of that is drawing any of the UFO activity over the house, or do you think it's just the soup that's going on there could be drawing the activity?
That whole area has a lot of UFO activity. Lancaster County, you know, all the Susquehanna Valley in particular on both sides is really heavy with UFO activity. And he had captured several of these anomalies in the sky in different locations throughout the area. And I just think it happened that this guy saw this. I don't think it had anything to do with what he had in the house. Though, you know, it made for some interesting conversation because, you know, I wish I'd have been there to look at it. But, you know, I don't know what happened. We never did find out what happened with the guy because he definitely wanted me to go over there and take a look at it. So who knows?
I got to think, if I'm a UFO, that's got to be one hell of a roadside stop just to stop off and see what's in that house.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, let's take our break here. And when we come back, let's find out more about the life and times of Butch Witkowski and talk a little bit more about some of the cases, Lon, that you and Butch have been on. And we'll find out more about Butch and some of the things that some of the adventures and times that you've had. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Sitting in with me today as we discuss the life of Butch Witkowski, who sadly passed away last week, is Lon Strickler and Eric Altman. We're hoping Dave Scott joins us here in the second half of the program from Spaced Out Radio. Lon, I teased before the break that we were going to talk a little bit about some of your adventures with Butch and some of the things you've been out and doing. I know we'd mentioned the upright canine cryptid before. Did you spend a lot of time on just that particular case, or were there other cases that you both
went a lot of cases. There were 30 cases altogether that we uncovered together, or, you know, that I would get referred to me and he would go out with somebody or somebody else with the team, or go to the witness's location and, you know, get some statements from them and such. But they were pretty solid cases. They were all pretty well supernatural based. I mean, there were some aspects of these beings that just didn't seem quite indigenous. I mean, or they may have been flesh and blood, but, you know, for a lot of cryptid activity, you know, there always seems to be some type of paranormal aspect to it. Either orbs are around it, or there's something else, UFOs are associated with it, or there's some type of glimmer to it, or something, or in fact, they may actually disappear, vanish from sight, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, the first case we got with the upright canines was an individual who was up in Clearfield County, who was out walking his dogs. He was in one of the state game lands, and this 8 to 9 foot upright canine literally manifested itself right in front of him and the dogs and walked right past them. And this guy was so shocked. Now, I didn't get the call on this. He called Butch right away. And he had told him about that, and you know, it was, and Butch went out there and checked it out later on. And of course, about a week later, we had another sighting about 2 miles from there of this individual who had, and I got this call of this individual. He was on one of the back roads outside of Pennville, I think Penfield, Pennsylvania, where he had seen this during the day, this upright canine crouching on the side of the road, eating roadkill. And it scared the bejesus out of this guy. And, you know, he called me and described it to me, and, you know, it's, but, you know, Eric knows that area pretty well. I mean, Clearfield is an area where he and his team have been doing Bigfoot research for years. And it was kind of interesting that we were getting these upright canine sightings there. But, you know, as time went on, they were going all through the state, mostly central Pennsylvania. But, yeah, there were several cases. But, you know, when Butch and I started out, we started out looking at this Todd Sees case. It was an individual from August of 2002 who had gone on his four wheel and gone up into the ridge to scout deer, supposedly, and the guy disappears. Not a trace of this guy. They find the four wheel. They find a few articles of clothing here and there, but nothing to indicate what happened to this individual. This guy's name was Todd Jeffrey Sees, and this is kind of a, you know, this is a mystery in ufology, to be honest with you. It's something nobody's really been able to figure out. And they had hundreds of people in the area combing the area around his home and up on the ridge. And for a day and a half, they searched everywhere for this guy. They had, you know, they had cadaver dogs and all kinds of things, divers. There's a pond near there that they went into. And eventually, later the second day, his nephew saw something that looked like it was white out in the yard. And it turns out here is Todd C's body just shows up in the yard, not more than 70 yards from the house, in an area where people, hundreds of people had gone by in the past 2 days, and it just shows up. And the guy's dead. And, of course, the coroner and everybody came out, and, you know, they gathered everybody that had been investigating and up there, you know, looking for him. But it was an interesting, it was interesting that they gathered them and took them to an area at the Tuckahoe Firehouse. And they brought everybody into the room, the big hall in there, locked the door. And these two individuals told these people, and we got this later on from somebody who was there, that they were by no means supposed to talk about this, what they saw, what happened, or anything. And of course, these rumors started going out, well, these guys are with the FBI. I don't believe it. I believe they were Air Force. I think they were military.
Yeah.
But they were in suits. So, you know, when C's body was found, the coroner came, picked the body up, took the body to this coroner's own funeral home. That's the last we heard about it. Butch tracked it down. We eventually found out the body was taken the whole way to Allentown, Pennsylvania. And a forensic pathologist actually did the autopsy that was paid for by the state. An independent forensic scientist did the autopsy. And then from there on, we don't really know what happened to the body, because the body was supposedly returned to the family in a sealed lead coffin.
Weird.
And they were told not to open it up.
Oh, that's bizarre.
And they buried it as is. I don't think the body was in that thing. In fact, we did talk to an individual who took several rods at the grave site of Todd C's, and he plunged them into the ground past 6 foot and never hit anything. So I don't know what happened. And that's the mystery of this. But there were some corroborated sightings of a UFO that was on the ridge at the time that C's was up there, on each side of the ridge. One was down on the western branch of the Susquehanna River, and the other was a farmer on the northern side, who saw this large disc-like craft hovering above the power line. And the one individual said it looked like somebody was being lifted up into it. Wow. Now, that area has had a lot of UFO activity over the years. We've gotten, you know, the case files on those. But eventually, Butch was able to pay and get the actual autopsy report from the actual coroner. She was retired, and she sold it to him. And that's how we got all the information about C's body. And it was strange, because their cause of death, the coroner's cause of death, was that he died of a cocaine toxicity. You know, he died from an overdose of cocaine, which is crazy. And that's not what happened.
Well, most people who die of cocaine toxicity don't get put in a lead coffin.
Well, not only that, I mean, they don't walk off the hill and drop dead right by the house. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I believe he was actually, and I think this is one of the only cases, and, you know, Butch and I have heard a lot of gruff over it, but I believe that this is one of the only cases where somebody has actually died through an abduction, where we know of, you know, the body was later found. You know, from all the evidence and all the indication, that's the result that Butch and I both came up with. And, you know, that in at this time right now, I'm still going to try to gather evidence, but it's been pretty slow over the past couple of years.
I bet. And especially, like you said, if military is involved, I'm sure that it's going to be even slower. Wow. I'm sure there's nothing available even at this point as far as Freedom of Information Act and stuff like that.
No, we've tried that.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked to every county that would have been involved between here down in Adams County, north up into Northumberland County, and anything, even in Harrisburg with the state offices and such, we have filed FOIA requests and, you know, we've never gotten anything. Though it was interesting, we did an interview with Eric and Sean on Beyond the Edge Radio. Mm-hmm. And Butch and I presented all the evidence we had at the time. This was about a year and a half after we got involved with the case. And we were basically putting a cry out for our call out for evidence. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, the day after we did the show with Eric and Sean, somebody posted a traffic ticket and a Social Security document for Todd Sees on Ancestry.com.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how the hell that happened, but it happened. So, you know, we knew somebody was listening. And, you know, since that time, we've had, people talk about it here, talk about it there. We did have a retired police officer who had moved down to Florida who was going to get involved with it, and he backed off. So, you know, the family won't talk about it. So, you know, it's kind of a standstill at this point.
You would think, and this is just me spitballing, but you would think somebody from the family would have to have been told why you wouldn't go into a lead coffin or why they sealed it.
I mean, I've got my theories about what happened, but I'm pretty sure they were told to keep quiet because they weren't thrilled with us for digging into it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some things that were kept quiet, you know, and, you know, we tried, but at this point we just haven't, you know, maybe one day something else will come out, you know, maybe we'll stumble into something, but, we've had several people in the area who've been looking for us for things for us. And, it just hasn't really panned out a whole lot.
You know, we've been doing a lot of UFO talk lately on the show. And one of the things that keeps coming up is the idea of disclosure, soft disclosure, whatever you may want to call it. And I think one of the things that keeps disclosure from happening is the fact that some of these cases may come to the top. Things that, you know, when it comes to abduction, people who have not had a great experience, or like you're saying, maybe Todd Sees died as the result of something gone bad. That the negative side of dealing with a UFO or a UAP. I know this past week I had a British intelligence agent who was on by the name of Frank Milburn, who was talking about how direct exposure to UFO craft and UAP not only had caused, you know, there's a report about how it had changed brain chemistry of people who had direct contact, but we were also talking about Havana syndrome as well. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the different radiation off of craft and how people who had gotten close to craft had issues with radiation burns and stuff like that. And I think that the negative side is going to come out should there be disclosure as well. So I think that's why a lot of that stays buried.
Well, the only thing I can say is, you know, I've done a lot of investigations with experiencers, and I even wrote a book about it, but I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff I haven't disclosed either. That you know, it's not that I'm afraid to put it out there. It's just that I don't know how people can handle some of what I've been told or shown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that's for another time. I don't think the time is right now, you know, but maybe at one point it will be.
Well, let me ask you this question then, Lon, because I seem to keep asking this question. And I mean, I get a good enough answer, I feel, but I'll ask you the question as well. I feel like, and tell me if I'm on the right path here, if disclosure were to happen tomorrow, that part of the American public, I won't say half, but I'll say probably a third to, well, about a third, wouldn't care. They're too busy in their phones and they're too busy with their daily lives. And the rest just couldn't handle everything that would be put out there. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I believe that.
Okay.
There'd be a group that just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And I believe it.
Is there a group you could even say that would be able to digest it and be okay with it?
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of people wouldn't care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it just seems that way. You know, there's a lot of deniers out there. You know, Eric and I both hear it all the time. You know, we come up with something or report something, and you're going to get deniers about anything you report. So
let me turn over to Eric real quick. You know, Lon mentioned that there are two types of cryptids in your area, Eric, and I'm curious as to whether you and your group have had this run in. Of course, you've got Sasquatch, Bigfoot, however you want to address them. And then you've got your upright canine cryptids out there. And they seem to be quite prevalent in your area or in your area of the country. Have you and your group had experience with one or both in there?
I've only ever received one case of an upright walking canine. Mm-hmm. And that came from Butch and Lon. They passed it on to me to check out. And that occurred in Fayette County, a little community called Roaring Run, where supposedly a woman and her two female companions decided to go out hiking some of the trails in this heavily forested area. And as they pulled into this pull-off in the Roaring Run Nature Preserve, the one woman kind of went ahead. If I remember this correctly, Lon, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but she kind of went ahead of the group. And as she came around this rock outcrop, there stood this upright, hair-covered, grayish-white canine. It was on two legs, and it was just kind of staring at her. She froze looking at it. It was snarling, baring its teeth, and then it quickly turned and walked off into the forest. She was terrified of it. And they had sent me that information, so I was going to go meet with her, check out the area, see what I could find out. And through conversations with her through email, she stopped talking to me, and I emailed the last time, and I was like, I've tried several times to get a hold of you. What's going on here? And her reply was very brief, saying, my husband doesn't want me to talk about it anymore. I'm sorry. And that was the end of it. Now, I know in the Roaring Run area, we've had multiple Bigfoot encounters over the years and sightings reported to us. So I wonder if maybe she had seen a Bigfoot that she misinterpreted as a dog man, possibly. But that's the only case that I'm aware of. However, continuing to discuss the Roaring Run area with my group, going out in the forest and posting on social media where we were going and doing some nighttime investigations, someone did make a comment that that area of Roaring Run is known for dogman encounters, and they've been seen quite frequently around that area. I've never received any reports of dogmen other than what Lon and Butch had sent me, so I can't speak to that, you know, if they're together. And I have not heard of any cases other than that one out here in the western part of the state. The further east you get, the central part of the state, Lon refers to it as the lichen loop, okay, if you will.
Yep.
There's been multiple cases in central and eastern Pennsylvania. And we had a Bigfoot forum in Fulton County, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it was 2019, maybe 2020, that independent researchers put together. And we got together a little church and had people come in that had either sightings or encounters or experiences and talk with us. And they shared a couple of experiences from out in central Pennsylvania that Butch was there at that forum. And it was a public forum. We invited people to come in and share their stories. But Butch was there. There was a couple other researchers there as well. And there's some stories of upright canines shared at that event. But that was further east than where I do most of my research. So most of mine's Bigfoot here in the southwestern Pennsylvania. That seems to be the dominant cryptid here in Pennsylvania. But as of late, the last couple of years, and more that Lon and Butch dug into the upright canines, they've come up with some cases as recent. And as he mentioned, they have 30 that they believe are relevant, valid cases that they've looked into. It's not something that's that you hear about like you do in southern Wisconsin, mm-hmm, or the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's more prevalent and more talked about, and there's more sightings up in those areas. But it's starting to kind of gain some ground and some traction here in Pennsylvania, or at least it has in the last couple of years. Lon could probably speak better to recent cases of the upright walking canines. But even when Bigfoot's concerned in Pennsylvania, for some reason, the last year, maybe year and a half, things have really quieted down. There hasn't been a lot of Bigfoot sightings or cases coming to myself. Stan Gordon, as you're familiar with, hasn't received a lot of Bigfoot cases. Mm-hmm. I think I've received maybe one or two in the last year.
Why do you suppose that is?
It's hard to say. It goes in, and it seems all like it goes in cycles. Some years we'll get an abundance where we're just overwhelmed with the number of sightings and reports. Other years it's quiet and we hardly get anything. It may be, and this is just my thinking, it may be related to people getting out in the outdoors, spending more time out in the outdoors. And I think with COVID being prevalent the last couple of years, I think people have stayed closer to home and haven't been out. I'm hoping more people get out, you know, now that COVID's kind of starting to die down and hopefully go away. We're going to get more cases, people being more active recreational wise out in the forest, camping, hunting, fishing, that sort of thing. But I really don't know why the cases have died down, but Lon could probably speak to if he's received any more Bigfoot sightings. I know you've gotten a couple, Lon, but I know it hasn't been like it has in the past.
It had been recent cases. These are cases from years back. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned COVID. I think it has a lot to do with it. People are at home and then they're starting to think of stuff that happened to them years ago and they're starting to report it. You know, they're seeing it on the internet. They're seeing it, hearing about it on podcasts and such. And, you know, they're less reluctant, you know, to come out and talk about it. And I think that's the reason why we get cases from 4, 5, 6 years ago, more so now. But you're right. I mean, as far as recent cases, the last case I had was around Christmas time up in near Potter County the county east of Potter County. Well, anyway, up near Wellsboro. And the people were out there looking for a Christmas tree and they came across one. And but that's the last one I've gotten. And quite honestly, you're right. We just haven't been getting a lot of Bigfoot sightings. And you're right, Stan hasn't been reporting them as much as usual, though the UFO activity has seemed to pick up a bit the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting a lot of these triangular sightings of craft along the Susquehanna River Valley. And I know, Stan has been saying out west they've been getting them as well. Mm-hmm. We also get the winged humanoid sightings here in Pennsylvania occasionally as well. Myself and Tim Renner and a few other people have been looking into that. But yeah, you know, we get a lot of different stuff around here. It keeps us busy.
You know, you mentioned the triangular craft. There was a time where skeptics would have told you they thought those triangular craft were our own government experimenting with,
we still hear that.
Yeah, with the transit craft or trying to take large amounts of people, maybe even off world or off planet to try and repopulate to different planets. I know we had one south of Minneapolis here, about 45 minutes south, go over Lakeville over a home furniture store, and it was the size of a football field. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was huge. It was just a huge craft. And it was something you couldn't avoid reporting in mainstream media. It was just, it was unworldly and ungodly how big this thing was. And I think that was almost a decade ago now that I think about it. I'm curious, do you think there is a, and I'll ask both of you, and we'll start with Lon. Do you think there's a difference between the Tic Tac and the triangular shaped craft? Do you think they come from different areas, or do you think some of them are man-made, some of them are extraterrestrial?
You know, I don't know. at this point now, I think with these recent disclosures by the military or the government, I've been saying this, that we're kind of being spoon-fed these older cases, these, you know, that have been declassified for, you know, trying to quiet a few senators or congressmen down who've been trying to open things up somewhat. I don't know. I don't think they're related. You know, there's a lot of lights in the sky. I've never seen a UFO. I know Eric has. I haven't seen a UFO or one that I would consider a UFO or craft. But I don't know. I mean, you know, we do hear a lot about these triangular craft, especially here in Pennsylvania. Now, whatever they are, I don't know. You know, we used to get those sightings down near Baltimore when I was living down there, and they would be these brief sightings where these things would be hovering in the sky and they just disappear like they vanished.
Hmm.
We've had plenty of those. Who knows what they were?
Hmm. Eric, what was your experience?
My experience actually took place while I was in Clearfield County doing some Bigfoot research. We were my team, we had about eight of us out in the field. We were doing some research up on Rockton Mountain one night, about 11:30 at night. And we were on this probably, gosh, really remote gas well line in the middle of the forest up there. And as we're just kind of standing around, we're trying to elicit Bigfoot communication, trying to get it to respond back to knocks and calls. And I happened to look up into the sky and I saw this very bright but distant light moving across the sky very rapidly. And I mentioned to one of the other researchers, I said, is that a satellite? And they looked up and this thing had changed directions, going from a straight horizontal direction. It made a sharp turn and began to descend. And they looked at me and said, no, I don't think that's a satellite. It kind of just, it's dropping now. We watched this thing for almost, gosh, maybe 40 minutes move across the sky in different erratic patterns, from either going horizontal for one moment and then vertical, to doing zigzag patterns, to doing loop-de-loops and figure eights. There was four of us that were watching this for almost 20 minutes straight before we called a fifth researcher to join us. And when the fifth person joined us, we wanted to validate what we were seeing. We didn't tell him what we were seeing. We just said, look up in the sky and tell us what you see. And he watched this thing, whatever it was, maneuver in the sky that an airplane, a helicopter, even a satellite, the space station, nothing like that, a comet, wouldn't make these erratic sharp turns and curves and figure eights in the sky. It was just the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And we watched it come pretty close in contact with what we figured out was an airplane. We could see the flashing lights on this airplane as it flew over the sky. We thought this, whatever it was going to hit this airplane. It flew right at it, stayed below it, and mimicked the pattern it was flying, and then just cut off and dropped down again. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. It was an orangish, whitish, green light that would change colors as it moved through the sky. And for 40 minutes, four of us watched it for 20 minutes, five of us watched it for the remaining 20 minutes. And I've never seen anything like it do the patterns and maneuvers it did before. I was trying to think, well, maybe my eyes are playing tricks on us. And I would look specifically at the ground to get my eyes to refocus back up on the sky. And sure enough, it was still there. And to this day, I have no explanation for what it was. It just seemed to kind of went straight up at the conclusion of the sighting, just shot straight up in the sky, and we lost sight of it. And don't know what it was. I still don't. I can't say it was an airplane. I can't say it was a helicopter, but I've never seen those particular craft do the maneuvers that this craft was doing. It made no sense. It would go from a vertical position, like I said, when we first saw it, dropped straight down like it was going to go into the trees, and then shoot straight back up in the sky, and was doing zigzags and figure eights and some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen. And I have no idea what it was.
That's amazing.
Wow.
I have a follow-up to that, but I'll just tack on to the end of your story that I guess the most fantastical thing I'd ever seen were the two and then eventually three crafts over the Bermuda Triangle when we were on the Jericho cruise, that we did a UFO intention experiment, and it was 65 of us on the deck of the ship that we were on for the Jericho cruise. And we did this summoning experiment, and it started with one, and then eventually two, and then three came up, and they were intertwining with each other. And the things they did, you just couldn't explain. The way they flew, you couldn't explain. The lights were one size, and then they got larger to signal us, and then got smaller again. And they rose straight up like a helicopter, flew from side to side, and then, you know, did these little loop-de-loops and flew in patterns that you know, they shouldn't have been able to.
It sounds very similar to what we saw.
Yeah.
And the only thing that was different is it didn't expand in size or brighten.
Yeah.
It always had that flashing colors and you could see the patterns it was flying around. It never acknowledged us. Of course, none of us had a flashlight to shine at it or, you know, try to, to signal it, but very similar to what you're describing, except this was just one, whatever it was that was flying around up there.
And then eventually, boom, out of sight. They just all left.
Wow.
And it was something else. I want to ask you both, and I'm going to piggyback on the end of your story there, Eric. We've always heard about potentially a Bigfoot connection with something else. Bigfoot being able to escape possibly into a portal to get away from human interaction, not just, you know, being able to be the world's best hide and seek champion and physically get away from you, but maybe even step into a portal and get away from you. Maybe there's something a little more extraterrestrial to Bigfoot than we know. Is it any coincidence that you were out in the woods and responding to knocks and whatnot, and all of a sudden you see a UFO? Did it ever occur to you at that particular point that there was no coincidence, that what you were seeing was related?
At that point, I really didn't even think about it, to be honest with you. I mean, I was out there looking for Bigfoot, mm-hmm. and that was my intention. And I had no intention of seeing what we saw in the sky. That was the furthest thing from my mind. All I was thinking was, well, we're here in Woodnox. That's pretty cool. And let's answer them and hopefully it responds. I was more concerned on that and just happened to glance up and see this thing flying across the sky and thinking, man, that's flying pretty fast for a helicopter or plane or, you know, any conventional craft. And then my mind just focused on that. And anything Bigfoot related, I wasn't even paying attention. Bigfoot could have walked up, patted me on the back and said, hey buddies, let's have a beer. I was focused on the sky, seeing what I was seeing. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And I haven't seen anything like that since. I know my mentor, Stan Gordon, who I've worked with for over 30 plus years, maybe even going on 35 years. We've talked about cases of high strangeness where Bigfoot have been seen in the same area at the same time or just before or vice versa. He's had several cases like that. I know, Lon, you've talked about cases that are similar like that over the years where a Bigfoot's been seen or a portal has opened up and Bigfoot was there 1 second and gone the next. I have no explanation for it. I don't know if it's something that our mind is trying to rationalize. That's why the Bigfoot disappears. Or if it's maybe a scent or a smell or a pheromone or ultrasound or infrasound or whatever they call it, that it puts off that makes our mind confused and we're so stunned by what we're seeing that we just can't believe that Bigfoot's there and it's gone. I really don't know an explanation for why people are claiming there's Bigfoot 1 second and it's gone the next, or why there's a UFO or maybe a UFO connection. It's happening. That's all I can say is people are reporting it. They're experiencing it and they're reporting it to me. They're reporting it to Stan or have reported it to Stan. You can't deny that people are reporting these cases.
Yeah.
They exist. Why they're happening, what they are about, what if there is a connection, I don't know. I have no answers for it.
Lon, have you experienced it either in your investigations or even out with Butch? Have you seen a connection between a UFO sighting and Bigfoot being right around the corner?
You hear about it, you know, people report it. They'll see, they'll have a Bigfoot encounter, and then some investigator will go out and they'll see orbs around the area or other phenomena. That does seem to happen more so lately. But in most cases, and even case, I had a habituation investigation up in Nova Scotia that this farmer had Bigfoot on his property, and he was experiencing orb activity and UFO activity at the same time. There does seem to be at times a connection there. You know, over the years, I have believed that there was an interdimensional connection between cryptids, not only Bigfoot. I believe more so now. I believe they're basically an ultra-terrestrial type being, has the ability to move in and out of our dimension and their dimension, or, you know, through this earth plane in a linear dimension, or some means. But I think they do have the ability to do that. And I think that's why we haven't found the physical evidence of these cryptids as of yet that, you know, that we really should be finding with if it was a flesh and blood being.
Yeah. Yep. Getting to the end of the program here, I guess I want to ask both of you, and I'll start with Eric first. Having had Butch in your life and having had many hours speaking with him and not only hearing stories, but gleaning advice from him, what is it that you'll take away from your hours of interaction with Butch?
Butch was a very genuine person. There were people that didn't like Butch. And Lon, I see Lon chuckling back there. There were a lot of people that didn't like Butch, but I got to know Butch, and I always got along really well with him. He was like a grandfather figure to me. Mm-hmm. He would tell his stories and share his experiences, and I never had any personal problem or personal beef with Butch whatsoever. We talked on the phone, we laughed, we joked. As you mentioned, he was very calm. He was a personality, and you just had to know him. Once you got to know him, he'd do anything for you. He'd be there for you night and day if you needed him. I had my Pennsylvania Bigfoot camping adventure that I held in 2019 that Butch came to. He wasn't feeling very well, but he showed up. Mm-hmm. And it was so glad he was there. Lon came to the year one before that with Butch, and we had a great time just, you know, sharing stories and laughing and joking. And he was a very genuine human being, and he'd do anything for you. And I think that's what I'm going to take with me is the memories of just the countless phone conversations we had, the short time we spent together. I wish we could have lived closer together, but unfortunately we didn't. But just a lot of the sage advice he'd offer me over the years and sharing his stories and encounters and cases. And that's something I'm always going to treasure and always remember about him. Just the genuine human being he was and how matter of fact he was and how he could tell his stories and add some colorful metaphors to it and just always make you laugh. And he always throws those jokes in there and he kept you on your toes. That's for sure. Absolutely. That's for sure. That's what I'm going to miss about him.
Absolutely. Lon, as someone who's worked side by side with Butch and someone who's gotten to know the man and investigated with the man and, you know, personally and professionally, what is it that you'll take away from your relationship with Butch?
He was always a good sounding board. I could get a hold of him practically any time, day or night. And I mean, he'd give me his honest opinion. And I mean, I threw a lot of stuff at him. And, you know, I would get a case where he could get out in the road and go there. And he would do it. And he would do a very professional job of doing so. And, you know, I have a group called the Phantoms and Monsters Fortune Research Team, and we have several members. I think we got 14 members now and about 25 affiliates teams that, you know, all around the United States where we can, you know, where we can put boots on the ground and look into a case. But when it comes into our area here in Pennsylvania, Butch was my go-to guy. And, you know, any type of phenomena, he was willing to go look into. And like I said before, you know, he kind of blamed me for getting involved in all this crazy stuff. But no, he was good about it. And I will miss that. I mean, you know, he was like, he was kind of my right hand on the team. And when it came to stuff that happens here in Pennsylvania and, you know, all around the eastern part of the United States, he'd go down to Virginia and other places as well. So, yeah, I'm going to miss him.
Yeah. You know what? The one question I didn't ask you, Lon, that I do want to ask you before we go, and that is, you know, I know Mothman has been a huge thing in your repertoire. Did you and Butch ever get together on a Mothman case?
He kind of stayed away from that.
He did.
I got to give him credit for that.
Really?
You know, most of what we were looking into was going on out in the upper Midwest and around Chicago and in the areas around Chicago. He kind of left me to that himself. I would tell him about what happened.
Yeah.
And he was interested in it, but I don't know how much he really believed it, to be honest with you. I don't think he thought I was lying to him or anything, but I think he would have rather just stuck with the upright canines, and that was enough for him.
Okay. Huh, interesting. Well, I know in our interactions here on Darkness Radio, you can tell a lot being an audiophile just by the sound of someone's voice. I wish myself that I would have had an opportunity to go out into the field with Butch Witkowski. You can tell just by the sound of a voice when you produce a lot of hours of audio and get to hear the sound of somebody's voice, almost imagine what someone's character is, what they are, how they are. And when I hear Butch's voice, I hear a man who's got a good sense of humor. I hear a man who has toughness to him. I hear a man who has integrity. I hear a man who will stand in there with gentleness, toughness, and who is incredibly detailed. And someone who I would have loved to investigated with. Someone who I think would have been the ultimate investigator to be out there with. Someone who would have thought with logic first, and then would have maybe put emotion second. I had a great deal of respect for Butch, and I really enjoyed the times that we had with him on Darkness Radio, and I enjoyed his stories. He's going to be greatly missed, and I wish we would have had more opportunities to have him here on the show. And I really do appreciate both of you for joining us here today, both Lon Strickler and Eric Altman. Wish we would have had Dave in here. Unfortunately, he was pulled away on an emergency, but we'll catch up with him. We'll have him on a future episode here of Darkness Radio. Folks, I want to thank you for a great week here on Darkness Radio. I want to thank Frank Milburn for being on Tuesday on True Crime Tuesday. That was an incredible episode about Havana Syndrome. I want to thank Beer City Bruiser for being on Supernatural News. And I want to welcome you in next week because we have a great week of shows lined up as well. For Lon Strickler, for Eric Altman, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you very much for listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. And we do want to say rest in peace, Butch Witkowski. We love you very much. And we'll see you all next week, folks, on Darkness Radio.